Americanworkersradio.com.
You're listening to American Workers Radio, a national network promoting American-made products with your host, Michael Blihash.
Well, welcome to another edition of American Workers Radio here on 860 AM. And I would like to ask that you go to your telephone, invite family members and friends to tune in. If they live in Philadelphia in the tri-state area, if they live at a distance, we have a great front link on the front page of American Workers Radio. Just go there, click on, and you'll be able to hear today's broadcast. Well, ladies and gentlemen, as you know, last week we had a very special broadcast as all the members of American Workers Radio's panel were all here in the studio as we celebrated the visit of Mark Andel to Philadelphia. And boy, I'll tell you, it was a very, very special visit. Mark got into some of the historic places. We enjoyed the company of many people. It was very good. It was a special day, and I want to thank Larkin Connolly, Rich Logis, and Henry Chaplinsky for helping me to make the arrangements to welcome Mark to Philadelphia. I hope that those of you that saw Mark and had a chance to talk to him really told me how much you enjoyed him and how much more you understood why he is the way he is, trying to do things to make America right. It was an interesting day and a day for great friendship as well. The first time I met Mark, it was last Tuesday night and then Wednesday during the broadcast and the other events. So I have to say, he's not just a voice on the radio or the man in the American-made movie. He sincerely is a person working hard to make a difference for the well-being of American workers. Really, Mark, I know that you put your heart and your soul, a lot of personal time, family time, into keeping this whole thing alive. And I know that you're putting your employees to work, putting your neighborhood on the map, Elma, and putting your stores up has really made a very positive thing come about. Mark, what would you like to add to my opening comments?
Yeah, you know, Mike, welcome. Thanks again. What a great time. Henry behind the scenes. Without Henry, we all fall apart, right? And just, it was a great time. The city was beautiful. You know, so much there, so much history. Meeting you, Mike, and for the first time and getting our crew together, we all have the passion and drive to make change, just good people doing good things. But it was awesome also to see Independence Hall and the Liberty Bell and, where the Constitution was signed. I don't know if you realize what a jewel, you know, Philadelphia is. To me, I was impressed. Of course, we got to come back down and spend even more time there. But it was awesome. Thank you for the invite. You know, the movie at night, Mike, we showed an American-made movie. You know, when I sat back and watched it and you wonder, you see my family and different things we've done, and I realize what I put my good people through. So it was kind of, it's always strange when I see the movie again. But afterwards, how much that movie changes people was impressive. You know, they truly see what the movie, where we were as a country, where we are today. And the people that came up at the meet and greet after the movie were just sincere, you know, and I can't say enough when they shake your hand, they don't let go or they talk to you. They really get it. And, you know, a lot of your followers just get it.
Yeah, they're good people, Mark, and they were really pleased to meet you and see that there is a genuine people in the world that want to go out of their way to help one another. You know, we hear so much talk and in the media and everything like that, but you and I and Rich and Larkin and so many others live this, trying to make this movement alive. I only wish that the major news media would help us out. If that was the case, boy, we would really move far light years ahead of where we are today. But there's the big problem, as we discussed, is that so many of the big merchandisers, the importers, are the people who control the advertising dollars. And so we don't see them advertised on the television promoting American made. I was riding down the street today in a car, in the car, all of a sudden, a sign came up and it said, Made in America. And I thought, wow, great. I was riding down the expressway on the way to the office, and there was a big truck. It says Larson's, number one in American-made storm doors. I thought to myself, wow, this is what I like to see. Two in one day, it's almost impossible to imagine. But it is happening. People are starting to get the message that we have a very, very big job to do. And if we don't do it, no one's going to do it for us. You know, the Ritz Theater was a nice place, and it really did, Mark, open the eyes of many people. Some of the people I spoke to, we had a big event in Doylestown this past week, celebrating Polish Constitution Day, and many people came over. And they said, I enjoy you guys on the show. I enjoy what you're talking about. We're doing our best as we go shopping. And that's all I want to hear, is that the people are doing their best when they go shopping to speak up. Because if the people in the stores can say, oh, I never hear it from anybody, then that's one thing. But if they say, I'm hearing it from too many people these days, we got to take action. That's a whole different thing.
You know, Mike, when you said you were driving down the thruway, you see these chains, you see a sign Made in America, you see a truck with Made in America products. That's what people, you know, our listeners got to take away. We're doing a good thing. We're making a difference, and it's working. You know, we want to stay positive. And a lot of people, you know, don't realize how much they've done already. By you going out, asking for Made in America products, buying Made in America products, is just working. That's what the people, and, you know, there's a lot of people in this country, we can make the change. And I just want to make it clear, Mike, that people should never quit. Don't give up. Just by going out today, wherever you go, look or ask or buy Made in America products. That is making change. And I love it because it's an action plan and it works.
It does work.
I'm very excited today to be opening up. We're actually partnering with our Buffalo Erie Naval Park, and they're great people. We love the veterans, and we're supplying our naval park starting today. We're actually releasing it, Mike, where the logo goes up today, and we got about four racks. So it's the Made in America store featuring products in this Naval Park Museum, and I think that's a great way to attack these museums. Most of them believe these veterans want Made in America products. We just made it easy for them. The Made in America store and our distribution center made it easy, so we partnered. We said, hey, let's work together, try to get more Made in America products in there, and then we show them how to merchandise and show them how to, you know, manage your inventory better. And it's something, Mike, I want to bring down maybe to Philadelphia, where you took me to Independence Hall and some of these museums. I think if we target the museums across the country and slowly, you know, take them all over, make sure they got Made in America products, it's a win-win.
Even if it gets to the point of a 50-50 balance,
yes,
then I won't complain. But,
right,
you know, even in our center here, when people come in, we only sell American-made or items from Poland. I try not to bring in anything else because tourists do question it, especially as visual as we are with our signs, help American-made, help American workers and things like that. We got to make sure that we look out for one another. I had the opportunity yesterday to speak with Pat Iding, who is a very well-known union leader, and we were talking about what are we going to do to unite all forces, union, non-union, the smallest guy, the biggest guy. Let's get together at one table and talk. How are we going to improve jobs in America and make the future of our young people much better? So there's a lot of things happening in the future, and we're looking forward to working with you. And Mark, I'm very excited after you were here and really meeting you and seeing what you're all about, that we're going to be able to do some good things.
Absolutely. You know, I'm real proud to tell you about, you know, our five-year anniversary is coming up May 16th here, Mike. Of course, you, Henry, you're Rich Larkin, you're all invited always. Of course, it's up in Elma. It's not real close. But we're celebrating 5 years, five stores, three websites. And we're proof that we can make differences, the people of this country. Having the five stores, it's incredible to me that 5 years went by. We were talking about that, Mike, with the radio show. I've been on over 2 years, and I think all of us came on about the same time, two and a half years ago. But we're making change. That five-year statement is pretty impressive for us up here. And I think we're only getting stronger, and we need the people. But that's just an honor to be involved with this and with your show for that many years.
You know, Mark, there's a lot of things we were talking about this past week. I enjoyed having a very good conversation with an engineer at this celebration on Sunday, and we were talking about what happened to the greatest nation on earth. For 100 years, for more than 100 years, America was the industrial giant in the world, and we brought endless jobs to life. In fact, there were so many needs for more hands that we had to welcome immigrants from all over the world to come to America. Well, that's changed. So much of what we're doing now was invented in the United States, and it was sold over, the properties were sold to somebody else. In fact, as I looked at some of the things that I was talking about on the commentary, back in 1769, James Wall expanded the steam engine, and that allowed trains and steamboats and factories to manufacture large amounts of goods and transport them across the USA. And yet, we're not doing that within our country. We're bringing in all the stuff from overseas. And then it was like Samuel Morris back in 1844. He invented the telegraph, the machine that we got to communicate with one another, north, south, east, and west, was here invented in America. And now most of those type machines are being invented overseas, or they're buying our properties, our inventions, and making them overseas. And we're looking again, I was looking at Elias Howe invented the sewing machine, which allowed clothing to be produced in mass amounts in factories, and yet most of the clothing is being sewn overseas. I mean, we have just one thing after the next that we look at the history of our past and say, what happened? And then I looked also at 1855, when Henry Bessemer invented the method of making steel out of iron. And we're bringing in all this steel from all over the world when we have all the resources in this country to make it happen. You know what I'm saying, Mark?
Yeah, Mike, it seems like common sense. That's where we seem to have lost that. It's just we've got to get that can-do spirit alive again and spark. You know, we talk about the schools, of course, education, but allowing kids to dream and allowing kids to, try and do different things, especially with their hands. A lot of people you talk to, they kind of get negative. Well, America's never going to be where it was and this and that. And I'm not buying that. This is our country. We've got to go forward. We got to make the change and adjustments, and I think we are. We're talking about it every day, every week here, Mike. And we just got to make sure people know they can do it somehow. Even Henry, you brought up your baseball team last week and kind of getting the morale up and getting kids to believe, even on all different levels. And it's always our job as parents and as contributors to try to do better. And that's what I think we just got to keep doing and keep pushing people to believe they can make change and want to.
And they will. You know, as I was talking with this expert the other day, we said, you know, Michael, he said to me, Michael, the basics are even gone. He said back in 1876, Alexander Graham Bell invented the telephone, which changed the way people communicated. For 100 years, the phone was mainly and only manufactured here in the USA for our people, for the American people. It did, you know, branch out over the world. But now most of our phones, our cell phones, where are they from? They're from all over the world, but not in America. Yet those things were created here in the USA. And I look again back in 1875, Thomas Edison created the light bulb, and that allowed many people to do things at night that they could, you know, not normally do. They had to do it during daylight. The light bulb. We're talking about the light bulb so often, and yet there's no light bulb really of quantity being made here in the USA.
Yeah, we sell the one. You know, I met the guy that owns the one incandescent light bulb factory, and his bulb is a better bulb, but it is a shame that we don't make more. And, I think even a space program we had, Mike, they should reopen that and relook at it. I don't think we're going to have a manned space launch until, 2020, but that leads to a lot of entrepreneurship, inventorship, technology, it really grows and creates jobs in itself, too. I don't know how you feel about that, but it's something I think we should always continue to explore.
You know, Mark, if just 50% of what we have in this country was made in America, that's what I was talking about with Pat Iding yesterday. If only 50% of what is sold in America is made in America, we could at least justify that we're in competition with the global economy. But we don't have a 50-50 balance of many items that are in our stores, and that's where your example really brought it forward. For 5 years, Mark, how many electronic articles do you have?
Yeah, right now, you know, we have the 6,600 products we sell, but nothing that takes a battery or actually electronic, which is a shame. You know, we always talk about the toaster, but we're talking about nothing. You know, we're always looking for something that plugs in, made in America. We don't have one item in our store. Of course, we're 100%, Mike, and that's our concept and core value, but that is a shame. You know, that's a problem. We've got to build things. A lot of the smaller things, we sell educational toys by Channel Craft out of Pennsylvania, but a lot of these smaller toys and smaller items gave people work, and we've got a lot of problems around the country. If we put these people to work, and they worked for a living, and they created their own food, shelter, clothing, life would be better. You know, life, we need jobs, and that's, people don't realize where that job comes from. When we talk about manufacturing or increasing suppliers here, it allows people to have simple, basic jobs, but they can create that paycheck every week for themselves.
That's right. And you know, Mark, how is it possible that someone like yourself could take action and just say, well, I want to give this experiment a try. I want 100% made in the USA. Why aren't our traditional American stores trying to do something like that? Even if they had a floor dedicated to all American or a section of the store, I don't understand where we've come. That I can tell when people question me, I say, well, you know, I hear 1,000 things, I say 1,000 things. Often I have to repeat things because there's not much more you can say. What is the excuse for not having something made in America that is electronic? That there's no excuse to me. Doesn't make sense.
You know, they've got to have the want. The consumer is demanding it. That's why we keep preaching and telling people, make sure you talk it up at the store. Just ask for made in America. That's the driver, because then they go to their managers, the managers go to their buyers, hopefully, and the buyers are going to have to listen, because the customer is the end. That's number one. The customer can make change. But they should, you know, we need more want. We talk about, you know, America got greedy. We got to admit it. But you do got to keep one eye on your country. And you got to make sure you realize how the system works. That economy is built on manufacturing and people working. And that's how you build a strong economy, Mike. I want to bring up when I went to the airport when I was leaving Philadelphia last week, I had my shirt on and I'm at, you know, giving my bags to the guy. And, hey, you know where, you know where that store is? I said, yeah, Mark. Oh, I know Mike. So Phil said, hello, Mike.
Oh, Phil Tarashuk.
Ran right into him.
Oh, I can't get over it.
Yeah, so,
my goodness.
Wanted to bring that up to you. And wearing a shirt through the airport.
He works for U.S. Air.
Yes, yep.
Oh, I can't get
it. Ran right into him. He put my bag on the cart, you know.
He saw that shirt and he said,
oh, right away.
It's Blihosh. It's got to be Blihosh.
Yes, absolutely, yep.
Oh, and that is so good to hear.
You know, down through the airport, I wore my shirt, of course, Made in America shirt. Always you get people looking at it. Landed in Buffalo, guy said, I like that story. He goes, you ever been there? I said, yeah, I actually own them, you know. And he said, good, you know, this is what we need. We need more of that. And he was a pilot. He's walking alongside of me. I said, really, you've been there? So it's just funny. People get it. I love to meet and, you know, people that do understand, even getting a coffee down at your airport, the lady's like, oh, where is that store? That's great stuff, made in America. She said, that's the stuff I like. So people do like it. They do appreciate it.
You know, I have a very special guest joining us today, and his name is Alan Dahm. He's a very special guy, and Alan Dahm is a well-respected realtor and a businessman in Philadelphia, and he's also a candidate for Philadelphia City Council at large. But something makes Alan Dahm a little more special to some people. They get the idea that this guy is really, really on the ball when he speaks up about what he would do to change our education system. I'd like to welcome Alan Dahm. How are you doing, Alan?
Good morning. How are you? Doing well, thank you.
Wonderful, wonderful. First of all, how is everything going on in the business these days?
Business is good. No problems.
Good.
Everything's good.
Now, Alan, I know this has been I was hoping we would have you last week for the American-made movie, but I know that last week was the big week with all the political people, and we're getting to the last few weeks of the campaign. But ladies and gentlemen, before I ask Alan to say a few words, maybe ask him a few questions, Alan is a man who is very knowledgeable. He's experienced in the real estate market are second to none. He gives you a straightforward assessment of your situation, and he also gives you an opinion. And that's what we really like about Alan. So, Alan, tell us a little bit about yourself.
Well, I came here in 1977. I went to school in Washington, D.C. at American University. Worked during the day, went to school at night. Graduated, came here for a job making $14,000 a year at Phelps Time Lock Service, a security system company, as a general manager, and had about 15 people who at that time when I was 21, I thought they were old. They were 30 to 45. But, of course, today, that's not old. But I worked really hard, 15, 16-hour days, double their business. They had been in business since 1904. Their business went from a $240,000 gross to a $650,000 gross in 2 years, and they gave me a $10 a week raise. The owners were 84 and 81, and they were careful about money. So I needed to get a part-time job, and I was going to be a waiter at a restaurant called Winston's at 15th and Locust instead. I heard this guy on the radio named Jay Lamont talking about real estate at Temple Real Estate Institute, and I decided to try real estate. It's 1980, got my license, did real estate 3 years part-time, went into it full-time, and did very well. Got into development in 99, got into the restaurant business in 2003. Served as president of the Board of Realtors in 1990 and again in 2013, 14, and 15. And said to myself, wow, Philadelphia's been unbelievably great to me. I came here with basically nothing. And today, you know, I'm in a great spot because the city's been great to me. I said, I see a lot of the issues that are going on. We've never really had a business person from Center City on city council. And I said, I think I could offer a lot and try to help the city move forward. You know, solving issues like the schools and poverty and creating more opportunity for jobs.
Well said, Alan. You know, you're on the phone also with Mark Andel, who is the founder of the Made in America store. He's a gentleman who took a big leap in life about 5 years ago when a lot of his contracts were taken overseas to China. He decided that he was going to rebuild, and he built this Made in America store. And in fact, he just starred in the American Made movie, which we invited you to last week as well. And he's done a remarkable amount of good work. So he is on the phone with us too. But Alan, I want to ask you something. As a successful businessman, what made you decide to run for Philadelphia City Council?
You know, my grandmother taught me when I was young, better to give than to receive. And Philadelphia has been great to me. And I really feel, you know, as much as I've had great success in real estate and business, it would be a greater success taking 100,000 people out of poverty and fixing the schools permanently. That would be the ultimate success, because helping other people is really key. I mean, more people in business need to step up and help. We have way too many issues. We have 400,000 people in poverty. We have 200,000 people in deep poverty. Deep poverty is less than $5,700 a year. And that's just, we can't be a great city and have that occurring in our city. We have to fix that problem.
Very well said. You know, Alan, after Election Day, I'd like to ask you, what would you like to be the first thing you'd like to accomplish, say, as a councilman-elect?
There's two things I would do overnight if I had the ability to do it. One, I'd raise the minimum wage to $10.10 an hour immediately, and then go from there, because from 7.25 to 10.10 is about a 40% increase, and 30 to 40,000 people overnight come out of poverty. Two, I would make sure that everyone who's eligible would receive the EITC money available from the federal government, the Earned Income Tax Credit. I'm not sure you're aware of it. Last year, we as a city left $100 million on the table in Washington that 40,000 families did not receive because they did not fill out the forms.
I did remember that, and working in social services, we try to make sure that our poverty-bound people know about that. And Alan, that is very true. I did get that notice from the city and some of the various departments and agencies that we work with. And the kind of thing that Mark and I and Rich and Larkin Connolly are always focused upon is what are we going to do differently in our schools to bring the boys and girls out of school with a graduation certificate and also some kind of a job skill? What would you like to see happen with our schools in this respect?
So understand where we are now and understand where we need to go. So I have two goals if I'm elected city council person, and I'm willing to put the goals out there for everyone to achieve them in 4 years. The first goal is to lower poverty by 100,000 people. And in business, we set goals, and we set up the strategies and the targets on how to achieve them. And I would hold people accountable, including myself, to those goals for poverty. Number two, on the schools. Right now, entering the ninth grade, 56% of our ninth graders reach the 12th grade. 56% of our students graduate from high school with a diploma. 44% do not. That's unacceptable. 81% of our kids in public school are in poverty. Now, this is not a Philadelphia problem. This is a nationwide problem. Nationwide, 51% of all children in public school are in poverty. I went to public school. This was not the case when I went to public school. But I think what we need to do is we need to connect reality with schools, and we need every business in the city to adopt a high school and provide apprentice programs for those kids who may not want to go on to college but want a job and a career path. So I'll give you some examples. We could go to the Urban Outfitters of the world and the ARA food services and Star Restaurants and Comcast and real estate people, and I can go through the list, and where children could apprentice from the 9th to 12th grade 1 day a week in a company where they learn specifically how the company is working with them, things they can do in the company, skills. And then in the 12th grade, the company will have a trained person, actually, and may hire them. So you'll have people who are skilled and trained versus right now, businesses say we have an untrained workforce. We're going to connect reality with schooling. So 1 day a week, they work in a school. This is being done, by the way, at one of the best high schools I've visited, which is called the Cristo Rey High School at 5200 North Broad. And they have phenomenal success. In fact, they're anticipating 100% graduation from high school and 95 to 98% onto college. That's phenomenal. And this is a school that only took children who were in poverty, less than $30,000 a year for a mother and father and two children. That's amazing statistics. But connecting businesses with schools and showing children reality and showing them the work environment and exposing them to more things is key. That's one piece. The second piece is I would expand our trade school program and make it easier for kids to go to trade schools, make more schools for electricians, more schools for carpenters, more schools for plumbers, more schools for bricklayers and tile setters and sheetrock people, and have them also apprentice with these companies 1 day a week. By the way, from the 9th to 12th grade, if you had a child who was apprenticing 1 day a week, by the 12th grade, you're going to have a pretty educated and knowledgeable person who you can hire in your company. The biggest problem I have is like hiring qualified property managers or hiring qualified bookkeepers. We could even have it for hospitality. But we need to get businesses involved. And they're only going to get involved if they see a benefit. And the benefit is we should utilize our public schools as a training ground for people to get jobs and opportunity.
Well said, Alan. Mark, I want to ask that you ask Alan a few questions because he just spoke our language very much.
Yeah, I see why you like Alan a lot. Welcome on the show, Alan. Mark Vandal. And yeah, well said. I love you mentioned every trade, but welding. But I won't. everything you do. I run a general welding and fabricating also, so I've got two plants in Western New York. We run 24/7. Our motto is "You dream it, we build it." And then I've got the five Made in America stores, and that's kind of a separate business, but tied together. My biggest problem right now is finding skilled workers, and we talk about it on the show a lot. I work with schools, started a small internship program where a 12th grader at this point would get a 54-hour class or 54 hours of time in my business. Then they get a half high school credit. But the problem with that, it was too late. It's in 12th grade. So we tied 5th, 6th, 7th, 8th. We want to hit these kids younger, and I always the problem was at the metal shops, the wood shops, electronics, power mechanics, they all had that in high school when I took school. Now they don't. So what you're talking about makes perfect sense. You're right on the course. Of course, you're a great businessman, and you see that tie. I can't find – I needed 20 extra welders last year. We couldn't find one, so we started our own school, started training, invested in them. But a lot of these kids didn't have the basics. And I think what you're talking about is, you know, make sure these kids go throughout their high school career one day a week, learn the basics, learn the business. Maybe you like it, maybe you don't, and then bump to another business, get exposed, and then find out what it is to be punctual and what you're looking for. And then you can guide your schooling to that also. And I think that's kind of like the German model. But I love what you're talking about. We need to tie them businesses, and like you said, reality. I always, you know, even the welding schools here at Alfred Tech and whatnot, I've tied with and working with, but they got to know what I need. And they're teaching them sometimes older processes for welding. It may be stick welding or whatnot, where I need pulse and stainless steel and aluminum. So it's really important to tie the community together, the businesses and the schools. And I love your idea. That makes total sense. And then you give the business, it makes sense for the business, it makes sense for the school and the student, and it's a win-win.
That's the key. It's kind of like a Drexel co-op program, but at a high school level.
Absolutely. Young enough, yeah. You know, where these kids, yeah. They get an idea of what they need. But, you know, I always blame parents and guidance counselors. They have to make this okay. I always said college is great, but working with your hands is fine, too. It can't be treated like they were doing drugs. If you want to become a plumber or a welder, that's got to be okayed in society.
But, you know, you really have two issues in the school system right now. You have issues for those children that are in poverty, and you have issues for those children, I'm going to say, of the millennials. And they're two different issues. For those children in poverty, we need to extend the time and the term of the school. And from pre-kindergarten to 12th grade, we as a city need to teach them life lessons. We need to teach them how to save money, how to get a job, from pre-K up, how to be an adult, how to be a parent, how to treat people, how to dress, how to do all those things that parents used to teach kids, but now 91% are one-parent household, and the parents are working. So it's very tough on parents today. The schools in those areas have to assume more responsibilities and need more money to do that. Otherwise, we're going to sit here in 10 years, and we're going to have 500,000 people in poverty. We need drastic measures to break this.
Alan, you are absolutely correct. My goodness, your message is, I heard you on Bob Rovner. And when I was listening to you on in my travel, I said, my goodness. In fact, I called Bob and I told him, and he says, Michael, we got to get as much PR as we can for Alan, because he's unbelievable and his message is good. And your message is good. How did we get into this situation in the first place, Alan?
You know, I'm not sure. I think that maybe as a society, because it's not just Philadelphia. This is not Philadelphia's problem. This is a federal problem across the country. And I don't think we valued education the way other countries do. I don't think we thought about, you know, in business, you think about, if I do this, what's the end result? In schooling, we have to say to ourselves, you know, not everybody's going to go to college. I mean, in the year 2020, we're creating 1,400,000 new jobs in the country. 400,000 need college degrees. 1 million do not. And when I went to school, I mean, used to have different trades that you could go to, whether it was auto shop or carpentry or whatever it was. And technically, they called them technical schools then, or vocational schools. But I'm talking about now apprentice schools. And we got into this because we didn't keep our eye on the ball. And we lost the middle class in Philadelphia. And now you have a tale of two cities. And when you think about it, it's smart for us to help people in poverty. They want to, one thing I've learned is they want to work. They want opportunity. Majority want opportunity and want a job. And as I've been traveling around the city, that's been my biggest enlightenment, that they really want that opportunity, and we have to provide it for them.
You're absolutely right. Boy, I can't agree with you more. You know, Alan, if you were elected, I mean, I'm depending on you to lead the way to get our technical and vocational programs back to where they should be. I'd like for someone like yourself, who has all the angles of business already before them, to bring the people in and say, give me the ideas, let me share it with the rest of the council, let's get the mayor and everybody on one sheet of music so that we can make it so that our boys and girls leave school with knowing what they're going to do, what they at least would like to do, some idea, not just take the sheepskin and go, and then what do you do after that? Go to college, go into debt, or not go into college? And Alan, tell me, what you see happening to the young people the quality young people graduating from schools across the USA and have no place to go.
Well, you know, the unemployment rate among college graduates is about 9.4%. The Philadelphia unemployment rate, actually, in our city is 6.2. So you have to question, some of these college degrees can cost you up to $250,000 for a four-year program. And I just think you have to make sure that if you're going to go to college and invest that kind of money, you're going to get the right return. I'm not saying people shouldn't go to college. I think they should. But I think it depends on what avenue they want to go down or what path they want to go down. But I will say this. I think that what's missing in Philadelphia is a coming together of all people. We have too much in our city. It's we versus they. It's those that have versus those that don't. Can't be like that. We need the top 50 business people to step up and help and form like an advisory group and help in these problems and ask them for solutions. I had a meeting with 30 or 40 of them about a month ago, a dinner meeting, and they said to me, you know, no one's really asked us for advice since Mayor Rendell. And that's sad because they have great ideas. I mean, I don't have all the ideas, but everyone else in the city has great ideas. And if you enlist them, together you can accomplish this goal. But Philadelphia needs to be a model. I'll throw out one more idea to you that I have. And I'm an entrepreneur, so I'm going to give you crazy ideas, okay? But I'm on the real estate board of Drexel. And 4 or 5 months ago, there's a lot of land out there by 30th Street train station. And John Fry, who is a superb leader and president of Drexel, the best I've ever seen, and has $586 million of construction underway, is looking for a major tenant or occupier, I should say, for the Innovation Neighborhood. It's like three blocks. And I said to him, let's think big. Why don't we get on a plane, take 10 or 15 business people with you, go out to Apple Computer, and say to Apple Computer, we want to have Apple University at Drexel. We'll build Apple housing for you. We'll build retail and restaurants that cater to Apple client, you know, Apple employees. We'll make an Apple community there and have Apple University at Drexel. And if Apple says no, then we'll go to the next company, Microsoft or Google. But we'll go to 100 companies till we get 5 or 10 that we nail down and get like 20, 30, 40,000 new jobs. The benefit of bringing Apple here, though, is we could say to them, we're going to make this a Keystone Opportunity Zone. We're going to give them some sort of tax breaks. But we want an exchange. We want them to come in and make our Philadelphia public schools a pilot for Apple products and Apple training from pre-K to 12th grade. By the way, for Apple, this is a home run. They're going to get great PR. They're going to train all these young people on Apple products. We'll get it for free in exchange for tax breaks. So we'll be able to educate our students and have them trained on a young age on technology. I think it's just a win all the way around.
Mark, have you ever heard it put better?
I love it. I love it. You know, that's what we need. And like you said, Alan, too, you know, the breakdown in a family you went through, teaching them life skills, even how to run a checkbook. All these things need to be added to school. But doing them big things, getting, you know, you've got the land, you get somebody big like a Google or, you know, Apple, or then you can make change quicker. Instead of 20 years, it's 5 years and things like that. No, everything you're hitting on, I believe, you know, I'd vote for you today. No problem.
Look, whether I win or lose, we need to do this as a city. We need to do this. We're the only city since the 90s that's had negative job growth on the East Coast. Our office building market has sustained it because a lot of them have been converted to residential buildings, so we've absorbed the inventory. But we don't really have positive job growth. And a lot of the jobs that were available for people, we had 350,000 manufacturing jobs in the 70s, we're down to 25,000.
I was just going to say that, Alan. Now, how did we allow that as Philadelphians or as Americans? This is a national issue. How did we allow that when we watched all of our properties, all of our machines, all of our, you know, everything that we had here as a livelihood for people, all of a sudden is located somewhere else? If it was 50%, no one would complain. We'd say, well, we live in a global economy. But most of what was taken out has not stayed in Philadelphia or any other state.
I don't think, you know, I can't go back in time. I can only say that times change. In New York, 12 years ago, they had zero business in digital. Today, they have 300,000 jobs in digital. We need to find new frontiers for our economy. We should have a business here of digital that serves 100,000 people and employs them. We don't really have anywhere near that. We have a speck compared to what New York has done. New York has an office of technology that specializes in digital companies that helps them locate there. I mean, we should take our pension fund, where we invest $5 billion. We should take $250 million or $500 million and hire a professional pension fund manager. Like, we have the we have really good ones in this area, and say to them, look, we want to return greater than what we're getting now. And in addition, we want that fund to invest in Philadelphia companies that grow jobs and grow taxes. Why not invest in ourselves versus invest our money outside of the region? Nobody, no individual would invest outside their area. They always say, invest in yourself.
Very well. You know, Alan, Mark and you have not met, yet the two of you are on the same sheet of music.
That's good. I like that.
Absolutely.
You know, it just makes sense, because this is how we could build a stronger city. It just makes sense.
You know, Alan, for so many years, it seems that the elected officials were on, you know, running here, running there, and so much was being done and so much was being said, but nothing was accomplished. A lot of talk happened. You were right. Philadelphia, at one time, we were looking at the statistics, had 420,000 manufacturing jobs. We went through on a tour one time through North Philadelphia, Broad Street, Botany 500, and where Stetson Hat was, and Phillips, and all these other places. How could we have allowed all that to drain out and not speak up? You're the first person that I hear with great ideas like Apple University and things like that. This isn't, it's impossible to believe that we haven't had another Alan Dom type person in the system 10 or 15 years ago. We would be 10 or 15 years ahead of the game if someone like yourself came forward.
Well, let me say this. I think Ed Rendell was a great mayor. I think Mayor Nutter's done a good job. I think John Street did a good job. Maybe we could have focused more on, I don't think it's, I think it's, this is from 30 years ago. You know, one thing that's a constant is change. And whatever industries you have today, they're going to change tomorrow, because that's the economy. And it's changing faster today than it ever has changed. We need to just get on track with where, what it's going to be tomorrow, and make sure we're at the forefront.
You know, Alan, you're right. And in fact, we worried about all the other things, crime and this and that, but we never worried about how are we going to take care of our people, provide a livelihood for them. That was, you know, not that was not the highest thing on the ladder of success.
Yeah, here's why. 75% of the crime is economic. If people had jobs, most of this crime wouldn't be occurring. Many of this crime is occurring out of desperation.
Absolutely.
Food on the table. I mean, if you give them a job, it's not going to happen. Yeah, they have to have jobs. You got to create that opportunity. That is key. And anyone who's against creating jobs does not know. I mean, you need money for all the city services. 26% of our population is in poverty. When you look at our budget, depending how you want to categorize it, anywhere from 50 to 55% of our budget is utilized by the 26 people in poverty. If you can cut the 26 number to 18, then down to 12, you're going to free up a lot of money from the negative side of your financial statement.
Alan, I'm going to ask you a question. If you were elected tomorrow, would you feel it would be what would be the best way? Let me put it this way. What would be the best way to get all the parties together, the state education level, federal education level, and the cities, to get back these vocational education and trade programs?
Well, I think as a city, first we'd have to come out of city council, then working hand in hand with the mayor, then our state representatives that are serving in Harrisburg from the House and Senate, and then as a group, we meet with the governor. That's the path.
Well, I think that's a path that it's a design for perfect ride on the road, smooth ride. It has to happen. We can no longer have our kids come out of school not knowing what to do. And as you mentioned before, and Mark has mentioned on numerous occasions, how can you go to a school, a junior high school and a high school, and come out at the end with nowhere to go, not knowing what tomorrow will bring other than to register for a college and hopefully they'll accept you and charge you the money, and at the end you'll just pass another 4 years.
Right. You know, the free library has a program now, which is great. K-4, which they want all kids to be able to read by fourth grade, which is really good, and it's going to be launched. As I think it's a great program. But in addition to that, I've read many studies that math is the number one determinant of a child's success in graduation at 12th grade. And if we could double the amount of math from pre-kindergarten to 12th grade, we'd have tremendously different outcomes. And I'll give you the best example. I interview people all the time at my company. And I ask them three math questions that they have to do in their head. Simple ones, like 45 plus 17. Half the people get it right, half get it wrong. I don't let them use a calculator. I want them to think it through in their head, because I want them to, when they're looking at numbers, I want them to be able to understand what's right and what's wrong, because you don't always have a calculator handy. But math is key. Think about this. Math teaches you how to save money. Math teaches you how to budget. Math teaches you what's good investments and what's not. Math teaches you how to budget your salary. I mean, reading's important too, but math is a key factor.
Well said. Wow. Alan, it's getting close to election. The primary's coming up on Tuesday the 19th. And, of course, I hope that you will be on the top of the list of the people elected. I know that you're going to do a good job. A person like yourself is well-spoken. I would know, and I would depend on you to be a leading force in making some of these changes happen, especially with the educational process, because if boys and girls don't have something guaranteed that they like to do or should be doing by the time they get out of 12th grade. I really believe also that a lot of the kids drop out because they're not able to comprehend a lot of the other academics. But if they were put in a trade program, they can have a little of both and at least be on the road to success.
Let me expand the trade program to another area which we haven't talked about, and that is in prisons. We should probably have some sort of, not all prisons, but some prisons. We have a revolving door in our prison system. We spend $36,000 a year per prisoner. Norway spends $90,000. We have a very high return rate. Norway has a 20% return rate. Because Norway looks at it as, how do I rehabilitate this person? They made a mistake. How do you get them back into society and be productive? And some of these trades, like electricians and carpenters and those types of things, could be taught and apprenticed in prisons, and they come out and they have a real job, and they need that break. We have 200,000 people in the city who have a criminal record, and it's tough for them to get jobs. We need to provide them with that opportunity.
You're right. In the prisons, in the schools, in every opportunity possible that somebody is able to get a step up, not a step, you know, with the handout, give me something because I'm not able to earn it. You're exactly right. The crime situation all over the country has gone haywire because people don't have a livelihood. So if they don't have a livelihood and they're hungry or they need something for their child, or, you know, what's really very discouraging, Alan, too, many of the people that I work with in social services, quality people, worked 20, 25 years, all of a sudden they come and tell me, Michael, the place is closed, and I've never done a resume. I've worked at one place for 25 years. I'm going to ask you for help with a resume and processing the resume, and let me know where the best place is to go. That person never would have been in that situation 25 years ago, because if their place closed up, there were five other places that they could be applying to without the assistance of anyone.
Right. You know, the other thing we need to do is we need to duplicate the success of the Navy Yard. The Navy Yard in the 90s was closed. We had a shuttered facility. Today we have a booming facility because of the tax breaks offered there. And it is booming. Anyone who hasn't taken a tour should take a tour of what's going on in the Navy Yard. It is amazing. But that success needs to be duplicated, whether it's in North Philadelphia or Northeast Philadelphia. And we need to create 20, 30,000 new jobs out of that type of success in those areas. We need to give the tax breaks to all those companies that went over to Burlington, New Jersey, and bring them back, like Mother's Works and all these companies we lost. Bring them back here.
Oh, yeah. Larkin, we just lost that Mother's Works within the year.
We were on Spring Garden Street. They moved to Jersey. We lost all these. We can't lose jobs. You got to keep them. You know, it reminds me in the real estate business of losing a listing. You don't want to lose any listing. You want more.
Well said. I love that. Very good. That's right. You got to be hungry every minute of the day.
The other thing that's very important is you have to go into, I'm in a frame of mind that these 400, I'm responsible for these 400,000 people getting employment. Me, I'm responsible. And I'm responsible to collect the $1.6 billion in taxes because that's all of our money. And if someone elects me, I'm responsible to get it. It's not like it's their money. It's our money, and I have to work on it. You have to take ownership. You know, I always say the best employee in any company is one who views your money as if it's theirs. And they make the best decisions.
Mark, what do you got to say to that?
No, you know, Alan, you're right on. You're an entrepreneur, obviously, a businessman. I was laughing, Mike, when we say, you know, we always want term limits, a qualified guy, and I wanted report cards. I said, if we were having an interview, Alan's, you know, superior. He's elected. You know, you're qualified, a businessman. You came from nothing. You have the experience. You've worked with people. Obviously, you've grown your companies with people skills. But it's really Philadelphia has to be treated like a business, and that's what you're talking about, growing the middle class, all them good things that have to happen, and we have to get on it today. But the ownership part you just said, Alan, is dead on. That's what I think a lot of political leaders don't want to take the ownership. They're more about their self. You're treating it's a job for you. If you're hired, you know, you're going to take that as your baby.
I read a book once that said, autograph all your work with excellence or don't do it.
Well said, well said. Well, Alan, tell us, what is your number?
Oh, my number is 87.
Number 87. Well, people who are in the Philadelphia listening area, please do make sure you go out and vote on Tuesday, May the 19th. And remember, one of our own, Alan Dom, who has a great story in his own life and his family life. And I want to thank you, Alan, for being here with us today.
Well, thank you.
And I'll certainly make sure that we're on every day, so I'll make sure that Barbara and everybody else promotes the fact. And, of course, getting the people out to vote seems to have been the biggest problem we're having in all across America, because people hear the ads, they sort of are blinded by everything anymore, and the day of the election comes and goes, and oh, I forgot about it, or you know, I the same guys are going to win regardless. I'm asking everybody, if you liked what Alan had to say, I ask that you make sure you go out on Tuesday, May the 19th, and cast your vote, and encourage everybody that you know to do the same. If you want change, you heard someone who is willing to offer change and gave the ideas with not a lot of dancing around. He put the turkey on the table and sliced it up. And that's what I liked about you from before, Alan. And today you just proved the point that you are very qualified for the job that you are seeking. And as a successful businessman, most people would say, why is he doing it? Because you have something, you've already done your success, you want to make everyone else a success from what I'm gathering.
Well, the greatest success is to help people.
Well, you're on the phone with another man, and Mark Andel, that's his whole theme in life. Help his family, help his fellow people there up in the Buffalo, New York area. He's done an enormous amount of work. I was really happy to have him with us here last Wednesday. He came down and we saw the Made in America film, and it was beautiful.
Mike, could you get Alan a copy of the documentary film for me?
I have one left. I will send it to you, Alan, because
Thank you.
Exactly.
I think he'll appreciate it. And Alan, just so you know, it's been turned into a curriculum for all schools, and the Georgia schools. We went down, met the governor of Georgia with Clyde and Saunders Strickland, the investors, and the movie took 4 years to make, but it's going to be taught as a curriculum in all 960 Georgia schools now, and then 80,000 students will see it this year, and then they've got another six states in line to take it as a national curriculum. It's called the National Education Initiative, and the movie includes that, so I'd really like you to take a look at the movie. I think
love
you'll really
it.
Appreciate it.
Yeah, I would love to see that. That's great. Thank you.
Alan, I'll make sure that you get that. And Alan, I wish you the very best, and I hope to have you back again soon. And everybody go out and vote on the 19th. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
Okay.
Bye-bye. Before we go on, I just would like to acknowledge briefly a few of our very distinguished advertisers, who include Leon Mankowski, attorney at law, Sedena's Auto Body Shop, Net Cost Market, also Mr. Joseph Drobot from the PRCUA, and Michael Steinman, attorney at law, as well as Dr. Eva Marchak and her two dental offices in Philadelphia, as well as Dominic Rostotsky, attorney at law, and Polka Deli, located at 2719 East Allegheny Avenue, and the Polish American Travel Service, 2714 East Allegheny Avenue in Philadelphia, Giorgio Foods, a symbol of quality since 1928, Washington Savings Bank in Philadelphia, and their president, Martin Bednarek, Yolanda Konopatska DeCipio, attorney at law, Karen Janad, and everyone from State Farm Insurance reminds you about auto, home, and life insurance plans through State Farm Insurance. And Dr. Wojciech Zinn and Everest Dental is there to serve you at 9892 Busselton Avenue in Northeast Philadelphia. And also best wishes from Mr. Frank Spula, National President of the Polish National Alliance, for all that he is doing to promote the American-made movement. Best wishes also from all of our friends and supporters from the Sugar House Casino, located at 1001 North Delaware Avenue in Philadelphia. Check them out on the internet at sugarhousecasino.com. I want to say thank you to Larkin Connolly, who is on travel today, Rich Logis, who is also on travel, and my thanks to Mark Andel for being here with us today, and also thanks to Alan Dom. He certainly had a lot to say, Mark, and I'm really proud of what he has to say and what he would offer in Philadelphia City Council. As a man who has done a lot of successful things in his life, I'm sure he wants to add that success to the great city of Philadelphia. So on election day, I encourage you to consider Alan Dom for city council at large. You can vote for him throughout the city of Philadelphia. Well, Mark, I can't believe a whole week has passed since we saw each other.
Unbelievable. You know, it was a great time last week, a great show today. Boy, does Alan get it. Wish him the best of luck. And, you know, Henry, I want to thank you for all the nice pictures from last week, too. And I think we just continue to fight the fight, Mike, and, you know, keep doing what we're doing. But the spring's here. Go out and buy Made in America products, right?
You know, if Alan is correct, we could have Apple University in Philadelphia at some point. But also that would mean that you would have some electronic over there, a computer for sale and everything else.
And you'll get your phone, Mike.
Oh, my phone. Yeah, because, you know, that phone already that I have is like 7 years old. And people look and they say, well, aren't you going to give in yet? And I say, no, not
Henry
yet.
Henry told me you got to wind it up and climb a pole or something. I don't know. Henry was leaking some stuff out.
Well, Mark, I want to say thank you for all of your goodness, for being part of our program. We're going to do many good things in the future. I think that everybody will be back again next week, and we'll talk about more ways that we can improve the quality of life for American workers. But this week and every week and 365 days a year, shop around for American-made goods so that we can get to that 50-50 balance that we talk so much about. Until this Saturday at 11 or next Wednesday at 11, my best wishes to you. Thanks so much, Mark, for your participation.
Okay, have a good day, Mike and Henry.